Morning, everyone. We're going to call the Government Operations Elections Policy Committee meeting to order. Representative Albright, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Mr. Chair, welcome to the committee.
So, no. Representative Tice, have you had a chance?
Mr. Chair, I have. Yes, I have. And after further consideration, I would move the minutes from the...
Mr. Chair? It looks like Representative Albright was absent from the meeting. Is there a rule about...
Yes, actually.
About approving a minute?
That's why I wanted to make a point.
Mr. Chair, I was hesitating.
Representative Tice, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, kind of. So, Mr. Chair, I would still move them. I was here.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Any discussion of the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor...
Is this indicative of the way the rest of the meeting is going to go?
I don't know. It's up to you guys. All in favor of the minutes from March 31st, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. With that, Representative Verdahl, welcome to the committee. We'll go ahead and move House File 2850 to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to be here. If you need any help on the minutes, I'd be glad to do so. House File 3110. Maybe the best way to say...
Senate File 2850.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Yes. You have the Senate file with the amendment.
Yes.
Just make sure the enactment date should be the day, well, it should be the day after enactment. Okay. We got that. All right. This proposal provides the clarification of the Capital Preservation Commission statute regarding the ability to fundraise and plan for the grand reopening of our Capitol building. It gives the commission the flexibility in how money can be spent. It indicates the commission does not have to comply with the MMB gift acceptance, which would otherwise be duplicative. We are planning, of course, the reopening of the Capitol in 2017. We'll have a reopening in January when the both chambers are open and essentially the Capitol is open, but it won't be completely finished until fall of 2017, and at that point we would have a grand reopening celebration of the Capitol. Now, what this does is allow for the Commission to do some private fundraising. The reopening celebrations will not be using public money. The purpose of this legislation is to allow the Commission to do the private fundraising that would be necessary to do the grand reopening.
Thank you, Representative Verdahl. Sir, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, good morning, members. Commissioner Mossman, Department of Administration. It's a pleasure to join Representative Erdahl, Chair Erdahl, this morning. I recall a photo of and the video of Chair Erdahl holding a stone above his head on the House floor that had of marble that had fallen off the exterior of the Capitol years ago to demonstrate the importance and the need to take on this restoration. And while this is a small and hopefully a non-controversial bill, I just wanted to join the chairman this morning to help champion it and encourage your support for it and as expeditiously as possible so that we could get started on the fundraising and the planning for the grand reopening. You'll see a lot of legislation this year. You've seen a lot of legislation in years past, and you'll see a lot more in the future. This is a piece of legislation that if all goes well, you won't see for another 100 years. And I just think it's important and a nice opportunity to take a step back and celebrate successes and recognize and acknowledge the importance of this work. I was through the Capitol the other day, and as I'm sure that I don't have to tell House members, it's an active construction site. There's about 400 people on site right now. We're at the peak of construction, and the work is going along apace, and the art conservation in particular it's going to be a jaw-dropping experience when people have an opportunity to be reintroduced to their state capital. And so I urge your support and happy to answer any questions with the chairman.
Thank you. Member questions and discussion. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this will
answer the question that Representative O'Driscoll asked, but this summer we were on a tour for the State Government Finance Committee out, and we went through Litchfield, and there was talk about some places where the statue is to Representative Erdahl in Litchfield, and I just want to make sure that nothing in this bill, money can be spent on a statue in the Capitol to Representative Erdahl.
Chair at all?
No, there won't be. And the statue in Litchfield, when you went by, I think they'd taken it down for cleaning.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, I mean, that was the Bob's Big Boy statue with the holding the cheeseburger. Is that what? Anyway.
Thank Representative you. Halverson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. How can I follow that? I actually just wanted to, raise my support. I don't see a lot of controversy with this, but raise my support for Representative Erdahl's bill. Thanks for being such a champion for history of our state and our state capitol. And I think that, you know, making sure that we're making it a priority to reopen the capitol publicly and let the public know that this is their building and they should come and be part of the celebration, the opening, is incredibly important. And I asked if you're going to give us a history lesson, but so let me ask you this. If I remember right, there was quite an exciting opening a little over 100 years ago of our state capitol that involved Civil War veterans, and the state really marked the opening of our capitol in a very big and important and historic way that we still talk about. And so I don't know if you want to comment on that or what kind of historical moment you're hoping to create for the next 100 years of our capitol.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you're evoking the history teacher in me. I will respond. In 1905, when the Capitol was opened at a cost of $4.5 million, in the opening ceremony then, the Civil War veterans marched down the street to the Capitol, up the Capitol steps, with the banners that they had carried in the Civil War. And those are the banners that are in the rotunda and are... Actually, they are rotated. So they're not all there at one time. And so the Civil War is remembered in our capital in many ways. Our capital is more than just a seat of government. Of course, it certainly is, but it also is a place where we remember and commemorate the history of Minnesota. And part of what we're doing with the Capitol Restoration Commission and other groups is to see that that continues into the future. So we hope that this is a grand reopening that will that the people 100 years from now will remember in some fond way as well.
Representative Mallory.
Mr. Chairman, before I voted, I just wanted to know if the testifier was, if I vote against his bill here, will he vote against me later this year?
Well, I would, but I can't.
Never mind.
No response, Commissioner, is probably better. Any other member questions or discussion? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, do we know when the grand opening will be? How long do you have to fundraise?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if Commissioner Mossman has a more specific answer. I don't think a date has been set. For one thing, we don't know the exact completion date, which will be, as I said, in the fall of 2017. But do we have any specific dates?
Commissioner. We do not, Mr. Chair and Representative. So we are certainly aiming for no later than mid-October to be done. We expect the capital restoration project to be about 95% complete when you all move back into the Capitol for the 2017 session and it becomes reoccupied. There will be work that will be continuing both on the exterior, on the copper roofing and the exterior of the building, and a few spaces within the building as well into June of 2017, none of which should, a bit of noise perhaps, but none of which should otherwise affect the functionality of the building, so it'll be 95% complete. But what we would like to make sure for this event, that there's no cranes, there's no scaffolding, it's all it's all done. And frankly, that's my hope also for the viewshed of the capital restoration also. So if for even the next couple summers, if we have projects that we're going to do on monuments or memorials or other things on the Capitol Mall, my preference would be to have those also completed by the summer of 17, so that in the fall of 17 and summer of 18 and such, we can have a capital that the people of Minnesota can revisit without being encumbered by construction projects, if at all possible.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might add, because the question hasn't come up, but you're probably interested, kind of arbitrary figure is around $400,000 to raise for this. It's a little bit more than your college parties.
We wouldn't know. any other member questions or discussion? Representative Runback.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it true? I thought that I'd heard that the world's largest ball of string in Dawson, Minnesota, was going to be dedicated to Representative Erdahl. Isn't that true?
Representative Runbeck, Madam Chair. Of course, it is Darwin, Minnesota, the largest ball of twine made by one man. 9 feet of stupendous beauty. But no, that has nothing to do with me other than it's in my district, and I urge everyone to attend as they go to Litchfield to buy cheese.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And don't forget the great little museum that's with the ball of twine. I've been there. It's great.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Mr. Chair, it sounds like you've all come
think we'll,
apart.
I think we'll end things here. With that, seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that Senate File 2850 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Erdahl.
Thank you very much.
Next on the agenda, Representative Anderson, House File 1235. Welcome to the committee, Representative Anderson. We'll go ahead and make a motion that House File 1235 be referred to the General Register.
I would appreciate that motion, Mr. Chair. Thanks. Good morning. This appears to be a fun committee. I enjoy it here. This bill, as you obviously know, comes out of the Ag Committee, and I think the reason it's here is because we have established yet another commission to take a look at something we've done. And just a bit of background on the program, the Farmer Lender Mediation Program. It was established back in the 1980s when we had another one of our financial crisis in agriculture, and I would say that we probably have one again today. But that is for a different discussion. But the program has been extended 19 times and with very little or no changes made to the program since the 1980s. And the program is valuable, but I think it could be looked at and updated in some ways. And in the one area that I have been thinking it could be was back in the 80s, the loan threshold was set at $5,000 to reach that limit to qualify to be eligible for mediation. That number is still the same today. And we know what inflation has done. Prices are much higher and such. And I do have some figures that the largest number of mediation notices are sent out to loans over $75,000. And the average debt per notice was about $164,000. So you can see there's a wide variety of loan amounts, and the average is quite large. But in that smaller category, I would say that there are a large number in that $5,000 to $15,000 range. But that's one of the things I think that this commission would look at. And because that we have, again, tight margins in agriculture, I would have approved that the threshold stay at 5,000, but as part of that agreement, we ask that a committee or commission be formed to look at the program, come back to the legislature with any recommendations they may have to make some changes to the program. And we have, I think, included farm groups, bankers, farmers, university extension. So the committee, I think, is pretty well laid out and a broad-based committee. And that would be the reason that I'm here, Mr. Chair, and would ask for your support for this bill.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Member, are there any questions or discussion to the bill? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. This is a good bill, and I support it. I think this just shows that we as a legislature can look at, you know, these bills, and we do this on a regular basis, looking back at legislation without having to have some sort of mandatory forcing us to do that by a sunset commission or something to that effect. But I think this is a good bill, and I think bringing this into the 21st century would be a great thing.
Mr. Chair, I would add that when this bill was heard in the Senate a couple days ago, the Department of Ag had to put a fiscal note on the bill, and if we have no target in agriculture, it presented a problem. But in talking with the department yesterday, they have agreed to absorb any cost for doing this study, so I really appreciate them stepping up to do that. Because a lot of times we kind of inundate the agencies with the studies and reports and such, but I feel this one is very important to look at the program and come up with any changes if they would see fit. So that's where that stands.
Excellent. Any other member questions or discussion? Is there anyone in the audience that needs to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I will renew my motion. The House File 1235 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members.
Next on the agenda, House File 3313, Representative Christensen. Welcome to the committee, Representative. I will make a motion that House File 3313 be referred to the Committee on Education and Finance. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick author's amendment that would need to be adopted.
The DE4 is in your packets, member. I will move the DE4 to put the bill in the shape the author wishes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the DE4, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Representative Christensen, to your bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for having me in your committee. This is a bill to establish a student discipline working group. It convenes a number of stakeholders to address student discipline. It's reasonably straightforward. There is no cost associated with this bill. The members of the working group are not eligible to receive mileage or per diem.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. Members, any questions or discussion? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the amendment, comparing it too quickly here to the original bill, what was the big change here? It looks like you're adding, maybe they were on it before, it looks like you're adding legislators to the working group, or what is the big difference between the delete all and the original bill?
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, substantively there's little difference. There adds a handful of groups as well as legislators.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to, I am a member also of the Education and Innovation Policy Committee, and just wanted to compliment Representative Christensen. We had many suggestions for you and many areas we thought that needed to be looked at and groups that needed to be included. And those working groups, I've created a couple myself. They do tend to expand and grow, but I want to thank you for listening, and I think it's a good bill, and I support it.
Thank you, Representative Seltzer. Representative Christensen, I see quite a few testifiers lined up here, so we'll move into that portion. If we could, if you are scheduled to testify on the bill, please kind of make your way forward and make sure you introduce yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Joshua Crossan, and I'm with MNCAN. MNCAN is an education advocacy nonprofit that works to improve public education for each and every kid. MNCAN is also a member of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, which really brings together community voices to ensure that we create long-term solutions to dismissals and improving school safety. So the legislature has been really called on in most recent media and news to actually improve discipline policies and to create long-term solutions for teacher-student safety, as well as creating an engaging climate. And so we think that Representative Christensen's bill allows community voices as well as those making decisions to be at the table to create those long-term solutions. And I would like to thank Representative Christensen for engaging with these communities, especially communities of color, communities of disabilities. Thank you. And we are completely supportive. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there other testifiers? Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robin Francis, and as a lifelong educator, I am very excited about this discipline work group. It's an essential work group, but again, we just need more key stakeholders to be at the table for the conversations. All too often, these voices are overlooked and unheard, and in order to make well-informed decisions in regard to discipline, we just need equitable representation at the table. It is always more difficult, I think someone else alluded to that, to make decisions when we have these larger groups and develop these solutions. But with many heads at the table, we can create long-term solutions for both discipline disparities and discipline issues that are plaguing our schools. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. And as I always end with, keeping our students at the forefront while making these decisions will ensure we're on the right path. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a comment on the bill, so if now is the time or after testifiers, either way.
Let me just check. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on the bill? I'm going to add about four other names on the list. Seeing none, we'll move into member discussion. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Christensen, thank you for taking the lead on this. One of the things that strikes me the first time seeing this is the title, that it's a student discipline working group. And when I look into the meat of the bill, there's a lot of great stuff in here that is focusing on prevention, causation, other issues. And so to me, the focus of this group is much more about before a student actually needs discipline. I think words tend to matter around here. And so I think it might be worth thinking about retitling this in some way to reflect what you're really doing, because you're working to prevent discipline issues, and you're working to make sure that we get ahead of issues of mental health crises in our schools, of homelessness, other barriers that kids have to learning. So your aim is, I think, very good and very important. And I looked right away, because when I saw discipline, I'm like, oh, well, you know, we need to do prevention, and your whole bill is about prevention. So I just had that comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Any other member questions or discussion? Seeing none, Representative Christensen will give you the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, members, I will renew my motion that House File 3313 be referred to the Committee on Education and Finance as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Next on the agenda is Representative Pugh.
Good morning, Representative Pugh. I'll make the motion that your House File 2932 be heard and referred to the General Registry.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of my committee. Members, this bill authorizes the extension of energy forward pricing to Hennepin County. Energy forward pricing is a mechanism that Hennepin County uses to enter into agreements to buy fuel at current prices, and in essence, easier said, then locks in those prices for future purchases. Prior to 2010, the state of Minnesota and the Met Council were allowed to use energy forward pricing mechanisms for up to 24 months. In 2010, the legislature granted Hennepin County the same authority. Hennepin County has successfully used this tool to purchase fuels, mainly natural gas, which has given the county more predictability in budgeting and thus has saved the county a significant amount of money. Over the past years, there's been significant volatility in the energy markets. The ability to execute energy forward pricing helps the county budget by locking in a stable price for a portion of what it will need to spend on fuel purchases. It also has the potential, when the markets appear to be favorable, to allow the county to lock in prices at or below the current budget to protect against price spikes and longer-term increases in fuel costs. With fuel at near historic lows right now, it only makes sense to be able to lock in these prices for a longer period of time. So this bill simply extends the period of time that Hennepin County can lock in prices from 24 months to 60 months. With natural gas at or near record lows, this bill will allow the county more flexibility to budget fuel costs over a longer period of time and give taxpayers greater protection against fluctuating fuel prices. So energy pricing does not obligate CenterPoint Energy or any other vendor, for that matter, to participate in any forward pricing. The bill also does not dictate that purchasing contracts be 60 months in duration. The bill proposes extending the authority for up to 60 months. The county and vendors still have to agree to the terms, and shorter purchase agreements can be used. So I do have somebody here who is willing to testify, who knows a whole lot more about this than do I. I have Dave McInerney here, Assistant Director of Energy and Environment at Hennepin County, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Mr. McInerney. Can you please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dave McInerney, Assistant Director for the Environment and Energy Department of Hennepin County. My responsibility includes purchasing natural gas to heat county buildings and facilities. Additionally, the county has a fleet of 750 on-road vehicles and construction equipment, including sheriff patrol cars, ambulances for HCMC, snow plows, and road construction equipment. Hennepin County spends roughly $3 to $4 million annually to purchase natural gas for our buildings, and another $2 to $3.5 million to purchase fuels for our vehicles. I'd like to thank Representative Pugh for her accurate description of the proposed changes to state law that would enable the county to establish a purchase price for energy up to 60 months in advance. The advantages of this legislation is the ability it provides to manage energy price volatility, provide better control and predictability of the county's budget for energy, and the opportunity to purchase energy at historically low prices. During the winter months, the price for natural gas can swing wildly. If there is an extremely cold winter, or if there is a disruption in the pipeline, prices for natural gas can become very volatile and increase dramatically in a very short period of time. Locking in a set price for a portion of the county's energy needs reduces the unexpected swings in the purchase price of gas. The price for natural gas is at an all-time historic low, and now is the time to purchase a significant share of the county's energy needs. Currently, the county purchases in advance about 50% of our consumption of natural gas during the peak demand months of November through March. This period from November to March are when prices for natural gas are at the highest levels of volatility. We see an advantage in locking in a portion of our natural gas needs during the 24 to 60 month period. Over the past 3 years, the county has realized a net gain or savings of $250,000 by purchasing natural gas up to 24 months in advance. For motor vehicles and equipment, last year we purchased 587,000 gallons of gasoline and 225,000 gallons of biodiesel. Just like in the case of our buildings, the ability to purchase these liquid fuels up to 60 months in advance provides an opportunity to reduce price volatility, control our energy budget, and lock in low prices when available. Since the county's energy purchases are paid with property tax dollars, this proposed change provides value to the county's taxpayers. Thank you for providing me an opportunity to address you this morning, and I'll try to answer questions.
Thank you. Is there anybody from the audience not on the list that would like to testify in favor or oppose the bill? Do I have any questions from members? Representative Seltzer.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Representative Pugh, for bringing this bill forward. When I was on the Hopkins School Board, we did the same thing. We locked in our prices, and that is really, really a benefit for planning and to take advantage of good pricing when it's available. I just have a simple question. You know, I'm in favor. I think it's a great idea to extend it. Why did you choose 60 months?
Representative Pugh?
And Madam Chair, I am going to defer to the expert.
Madam Chair, Representative, we believe that something longer than 2 years would be beneficial since the prices are historically low, looking out in advance at the markets. Going beyond 5 years is probably more of a risk than what the county is typically worth doing. So we believe that 5 years is the right number.
Representative Seltzer?
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the members? Seeing none, Representative Pugh, I'll have you say some closing remarks.
Well, thank you, members. I think this is a very, very good bill. We'll continue to save and the taxpayers of Hennepin County resources, and that's a good thing.
Thank you. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2932 be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Next, we have Representative Albright with House File 2915. And I'm going to make a motion that House File 2915 be referred to the State Government Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Members, House File 2915, as you see it before you, would require Minnesota Management and Budget to report to the legislature yearly on the state's use of federal funds. In addition to getting a clear understanding, or a clearer understanding for some, of how much federal money Minnesota government spends, legislators and the public will, if enacted, have a better idea of how much state money is used to draw down federal funds through a match or maintenance of effort. The state spends billions of dollars, federal dollars that is, across all budget areas. And many times that money comes with strings attached or necessitates additional employees. Gaining a clearer understanding every year of the financial relationship between the state and the federal government, in my opinion, will allow legislators to make more informed decisions as well as how to prioritize our own budget. Most of the information that would be required to be included in this federal funds report is available across various sources at the state, and compiling them all together in one clear report will help with the cause of creating a much more transparent and understandable budget. And as we've heard from prior testimony from Representative Nelson, I do believe that this action really does bring our state from a perspective of empowering the legislature into the 21st century. So with that, members, I'm happy to stand for questions.
Is there anyone who would like to testify on this bill? Okay. Are there any members that have a question? Oh, sorry. Hi, please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Margaret Kelly. I'm the State Budget Director with Minnesota Management and Budget.
Okay.
And I just have a couple comments to make that this bill requires information that is consistent with what we currently provide in the biennial budget document. So that's once every biennium. So the bill's asking for it every year. We unfortunately do not have the information in one place. We don't have it residing in our budget system or in our accounting system. We currently transmit the report, but the work falls to state agencies to put the information in a format that's usable for all of you. So to do this on an annual basis simply requires more work on the part of state agencies. But to the extent that it's useful to all of you, I'm sure that would be something we can manage to pull together. I would just want to continue to work with the author to make an amendment to have the timing of this report be consistent with the delivery of our biennial budget.
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Director Kelly brings up some very good points, and we are very amenable to working with them to coordinate so that it is as meaningful and robust of a data collection as possible, and also might add that we would like to entertain some conversations with Minute to make sure that the transference of data is as seamless as possible. And it might be helpful for the organizations to appreciate just how that could be maybe a pilot project for pulling that data together for the purposes of MMB as well. So we're looking forward to working together on this project.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the first question I have is, where do we say we're sending this?
To Representative Nelson, we're sending it to State Government Finance.
Thank you. That's what I was wondering. If it's, because there's going to cost to it, it should go to a finance committee. I don't see a fiscal note with it now, and I know we're not the finance committee, but if there's going to be a cost, it needs to go there.
Okay. Are there any other member questions? Okay. With that, Representative Albright, I'll have you say a few closing words.
Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to present this, what I think is a good opportunity to really appreciate just the intertwining of two very large budgets, both from Washington and St. Paul, and how we can, I think, be empowered to make better and more instructive considerations of legislation as we move forward with this intact. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you. With that, members, I renew my motion that House File 2915 be referred to State Government Finance. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Next, we'll move to House File 3644, Representative Wagenius. Welcome to the committee, and go ahead and make a motion that House File 3644 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that was heard in subcommittee, and as we were in subcommittee, there was...
You speak louder. Or
speak louder. Okay. It was heard in subcommittee, and as we were chatting in subcommittee and working with Met Council, they asked for some slight changes in wording, but doesn't change at all the intent of the bill. So there is an amendment that council put before you, and if you would want to work off the amendment, that would be appreciated.
I will make a motion to move the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. Any discussion before we put the bill in the shape the author wishes? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Representative Wagenius, to your bill is amended.
Thank you. This bill does, you can read line 1.13 and 1.1.4, and it basically says that the Met Council cannot impose SAC charges on a local eating or business establishment due to the outdoor expansion of outdoor seating. And when we define the establishment, eating or drinking establishment, you look at lines 1.9, 1.10, and it says coffee shops, bars, restaurants, or similar businesses that serve food or beverages to customers on site. This bill came to me from Councilmember Andrew Johnson, who Councilmember Johnson and I share some part of Minneapolis. And I would like him to tell you exactly who brought the bill to him, and you are going to see some testifiers here who can tell you about it.
Councilmember Johnson, welcome to the committee. If you would just introduce yourself for the record, and then you can proceed with testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andrew Johnson. I am a Minneapolis City Council member representing Ward 12, a little more than 30,000 constituents, and we're in South Minneapolis. And I love our small businesses. Actually, I used to be a small business owner. I have an entrepreneurial spirit and have been working to help our small businesses. And time after time after time, the number one thing I hear about is SAC fees. They're the single largest fee imposed on any small business by the government. It's amazing. Yesterday, we actually had two small business owners here to testify. We had Sam Nessingen from Parkway Pizza. He testified that he had to pay $8,000 to open up his pizza shop. And then when he moved it a few blocks over, he had to pay $16,000 more. That is time and time again, you hear of this. I have literally seen businesses go under because of SAC fees. I've literally seen businesses not open up after putting together their plan, investing their time, their money, and all of that because of SAC fees. I've seen businesses not expand because of SAC fees. And overall, it is stifling growth in our city. It is preventing jobs from being created, and it leaves our community less strong, less vibrant than it could be if not for these fees. And I understand that this bill is not going after all SAC fees, though I wish we could go after all SAC fees. I understand that council has to have a revenue stream for their sewer system. You know, this bill, though, makes sense. It is something that is going to be helpful for small business owners, particularly Ann Erickson, who was in yesterday from Kenai Coffee. She wanted to put out six seats and three tables on the sidewalk and would have had to pay $1,500 to do it. That's a lot of coffee. That is a lot of coffee to sell to do that. And especially when the largest, most expensive item in her shop is about $5. So she said, you know what, I'm not going to do it. In economics, that's called a dead weight loss, where Met Council doesn't get their revenue, where the business owner doesn't put out the tables and chairs and get more customers, and where the customers lose out, and the community ultimately loses out. So everyone's a loser. What kind of a system is that? And so this would really allow business owners to be successful in that space. And, you know, I just want to finally say before we introduce some new faces to you today, business owners affected by SAC fees, I want to say it's based off of a false premise. Really, it is. You know, with these SAC fees, the idea is, oh, if you're expanding your seating area, you're going to have more people flushing the toilets, using the sinks, and ultimately putting strain on the system. But the fact is, for our small business owners, their customers, by and large, 95% of them are coming from the neighborhood. So they're either going to be flushing the toilet at home or they're going to be flushing it at the business. But overall, it is a net neutral difference. And for a lot of these business owners, too, when you put out sidewalk seating, you know, people are just moving from inside to outdoors. So you're not having some huge increase. And we found that yesterday when Met Council said that they couldn't calculate the difference of people sitting outside. And I think that this is a reasonable bill. It's going to, you're going to be ultimately heroes for the small business community. I tell you, if we got the word out on this, we'd have over 10,000 small business owners here from across the metro telling you that they hate SAC fees. Do an experiment. Go ask one of them about SAC fees next time you're out eating. So I really appreciate the committee taking this up. And with that, I want to introduce our first small business owner, Ruhel Islam from Gandhi Mahal.
Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. If you would, please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Ruhel Islam, owner of Gandhi Mahal Bangladeshi Indian Restaurant. Our restaurant is dedicated to bringing you peace by pleasing your palates. We think globally, ecologically, participating and patronizing local food sources. But thank you for the opportunity today here. And one word I can say, yes, we are here to support this bill. And if you want to hear my story, I can tell a little story if you allow.
Yes, a brief story is perfect.
Okay, 2009, we started our business in 2008. 2009, we expanded and with the sidewalk cafe. There was a big SAC charge we received. I thought that was a scam or something, and we got scared because the immigrant business owner, you know, it's not easy to do business, come from another country. But again, it's a wonderful country, give us opportunities to achieve those dreams. And it's very important. I felt very burdened because small business, especially restaurant, is a high-risk business. We really need support. And we depend on the cash flow and also depend on the day-to-day, daily basis, the cash flow business. Yes, it was, but again, I want to thanks to Met Council to arrange some installment payment for us. It was make it a little easier. but it was adding another cost every month to our bills. We have to pay a mortgage, we have to pay rent, and basically we are collecting taxes, sales tax, revenue, the real estate tax, all kinds of taxes. So right now we want to expand even more, but after that shock, I feel like, if there is a no sec charge, we could have expand and have a restaurant right here around the Capitol building and pleasing your palates here too. But this is us pulling us in the back. But I really appreciate your... Yeah, thank you very much first for this book. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Good morning. My name is Jamie Robinson. Excuse me. I am owner and I own and operate Northbound Smokehouse and Brew Pub in South Minneapolis. We employ about 45 employees, and we collect about $20,000 a month in sales tax for the state and local governments. This could have not happened, actually, this very successful business in South Minneapolis. We hit a stumbling block because I grossly underestimated the SAC fees when we opened. We budgeted $12,000, or actually closer to $20,000 in SAC fees to open up. Now, I'm not saying it's the state's responsibility to lower taxes so that more businesses could just open up. I'm actually making the argument that there would not be a $20,000 a month sales tax indefinitely coming from our business had we not opened up, and one of the biggest stumbling blocks for us to open up were the SAC fees. That said, the we're looking into a sidewalk patio or a sidewalk dining option, and one of the biggest hurdles for that is it doesn't make financial sense to actually open up, put five tables outside, move people from inside in the air conditioning to outside on the patio. If these SAC fees are coming in the way that they look like they're coming in at this point, we just won't do it. And that revenue, the sales tax revenue, will not be collected. People may just choose not to go to our restaurant, may choose to stay home. I don't know. The idea is that there's very little option for growth if it doesn't make sense due to the SAC fees.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Marla Jadunanen, and I'm the owner of Marla's Caribbean Cuisine, a small operation in South Minneapolis. And being from the Caribbean, a lot of people would like to take their tasty meals outside. However, because of the SAC fees, we have not done that. We just can't afford it right now. As a small business owner, it's very burdened on us with a lot of different, fees that we're slapped with. We're just looking to see if this can be at least, diminished or gone away completely, that we can at least do that. As we all know, in Minnesota, we have a very short time outside, and a lot of us like to be out there. Even though it's windy, it's rainy, we can get whatever weather. So, but coming back to the points, I would really like to have a patio out there. It's just a few seatings, but the SAC fees are really preventing us right now. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
And I encourage all of you guys to come try us out.
Excellent business owner. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. My name is Eric Forsberg. I'm the owner of Devil's Advocate in downtown Minneapolis. I'm also in the process of building out the former Hubert space across from U.S. Bank Stadium, and have recently acquired Dan Kelly's in downtown Minneapolis. So patios have obviously become a very big part of my life rather quickly. The thing about the SAC charges that we're dealing with, and from the downtown perspective in particular, I can speak to formerly having a space called the Ugly Mug on First Avenue. And we've looked at expanding at Devil's Advocate into a back patio area, something that we did not do because of SAC charges. my business downtown, by not having patio, reduces by about 20 to 25% from winter to summer. We face a lot of competition when it comes to summer, that being some other businesses. You know, we have the local and Brits and some of the places that have larger outdoor seating that you're familiar with. But it's not just competition from our other businesses. In Minnesota, we obviously know, being a very active state, that people, our biggest competitor is actually backyards and barbecues and people wanting to actually finally get outside. The interesting thing about our patio season, as Marla kind of alluded to, is that we have about a 4-month, give or take, window of patio time. So when people really start to make that determination of when they want to eat and where they want to eat, it makes a big difference, especially for us. And that's where we really see the decrease in our business, by not having patio. Now, for us to increase patio, and at Dan Kelly's in particular, we are looking to add a patio space to that, because that space actually faces the same problem we have at Devil's Advocate, which is a 20% reduction in business. All we are looking to do by adding that patio, the seats that we would actually add into it, is maintain that 20%. We're not going to increase business. And if you look at the industry as a whole, there are outliers. You will find that there are a number of businesses that do increase their business during the summer months due to having a larger patio area. But by and large, it's not. We are mostly doing it to just maintain the business that we have. So if you have 100 seats inside, if you add 20 seats outside, you're not adding 20 more people to your overall seating capacity. You're just moving those 20 people from inside to outside and giving them that ability to actually just do something and not go somewhere else, or just go home after work, to be honest with you. So, and current SAC charges are, I believe, a 25% of a normal SAC charge for patios, because it's considered a non-use or a limited-use space. But as I'm trying to make, as an industry, a cross-industry percentage, we're not doing 25% more in business, and we're not doing 25% more in wastewater due to having our patio spaces. So the reduction in SAC charges for outdoor patios, and as Councilman Johnson pointed out, just the ability to spurn business, particularly in my neighborhood, downtown Minneapolis, that we're constantly fighting with, you know, with some of the suburbs, and again, with people making the decision to just eat at home or otherwise. This is a big, big deal for downtown Minneapolis restaurants, and where people are just looking at so many other things. You're not going to get a lot of people that are restaurateurs that are going to be fighting you on the idea, of course, we want good, clean water. We want a good place for it to go. We understand that we have to be able to process any wastewater that we do, and we use a lot of water. Restaurants we just consume a lot of water. We understand that. However, this is not an addition to it. So if we could address this, help spurn some business, and actually motivate some people to start putting more outdoor seating, motivate people to open their patios, motivate people to reinvest in their actual restaurants and the places where we are already investing billions of dollars. Billions of dollars we're investing to try and have entertainment centers for Minneapolis. Well, let's make it the best entertainment area that we can, and let's help them instead of hinder them.
Thank you, Mr. Forsberg, for your testimony. Mr. Bagnoli, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Joe Bagnoli. I'm with the McGrann Shea Law Firm. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, the State Association of Bars and Liquor Stores, and I think the last testifier did a nice job on describing the issue. This was an issue that has consistently been an issue. It was really brought to the fore when the smoking ban passed, when a lot of bars and restaurants had the same customers who happened to smoke, and they wanted to make an accommodation for them, and they started to do more patios to give folks an accommodation, and we ran into an issue where all of these, the same group of people, and I think he described it very well, it's not more people, it's the same people, they just given an option to eat outside. So I would really strongly encourage you to consider this support this provision, not consider it, support this provision. I think it will lead to, during those summertime months where we have limited times to be outside, more people being outside, spending time with their families and friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli, for your testimony. Mr. Hill, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Todd Hill with Hill Capital Strategies, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. I'll be very brief. We are very supportive of this legislation. Our member, Mr. Forsberg, I think hit it out of the ballpark when explaining why it's important. I also did want to point out that this does apply to the metro area. It does not just apply to the city of Minneapolis. I think that's very important. And with that, we urge you to support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Excellent. Anyone? I have Ms. Nauman on the list to testify. And this is the last individual I have listed, so if there's anyone else that would like to testify, yep, just make your way. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. We represent 91 cities in the metro area. I want to speak. I can really appreciate the concerns that have been raised around SAC. I hear from cities probably every week who don't like SAC. Nobody really wants to pay SAC. The policies of Metro Cities do support fairness and equity for all SAC payers. So all users of SAC, everyone who pays, we support having equity amongst the payers of SAC. And a program, a SAC program, that is based on having that utility be cost of service. We've had lots of discussions over the years with the Metropolitan Council and with city officials about the SAC program, and I'll get into that in a minute. But one of the policies that we do have is sort of general opposition to using the SAC structure to subsidize or exempt particular uses from the fee, as this does raise the cost of those SAC charges for all businesses in the region. The issue, I would say, that sort of incumbent with that is that it ends up undermining the program as a cost of service utility for all payers in the region. Metro Cities has worked over the years, as I pointed out, with Met Council staff and city officials to address a variety of issues related to the SAC program, and those do include how the criteria are developed for SAC charges. We've looked at the principles of the program. We've looked at how to address who pays what sort of growth or current users for SAC. And I would think the organization would prefer that, and certainly would be open to re-examining how outdoor seating is mm-hmm. is viewed under the SAC structure. We had a discussion about that a few years ago, and would prefer that the city officials in the region who are charged SAC work with the Met Council again to re-examine those issues and sort of include all of the SAC payers in that discussion. Happy to stand for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Nauman, it's my understanding that these eating establishments are charged an annual SAC fee even if they have patio seating for a couple of months. Is that correct currently?
That's not, SAC is a one-time fee. And
they're charged the whole fee whether or not they have patio seating for 1 month or for 12 months.
I'm going to let MCS sure. speak to that, but what I do know is that there's a 75% discount for outdoor seating, and that was what we had discussed with MCES a few years ago, but I defer to the Met Council to address the actual mechanics of the program.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. You. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jason Willett. I'm an assistant general manager at MCS and formerly for many years the finance director for MCS. If you don't know, MCS is primarily the wastewater utility in the metro region. We serve directly 108 cities as well as 800 industries or so on permit. Our wastewater treatment costs are 100% user fee funded, 100%, and that includes supporting $1.3 billion of outstanding debt. There's no direct federal or state support currently, and there's no tax money involved in this. So we have a variety of fees, which obviously are not always comfortable for people. Our environmental performance is outstanding compared to the metro region's own history, to greater Minnesota, to our peer metro areas around the country. We regularly get national and state awards for environmental performance. Moreover, our basic sewer charge is 40% below the national average and better than 70% of the peer metropolitan agencies. We provide excellent value to the region, and low water rates are a competitive advantage for metro businesses and a livability advantage for residents. The SAC charge, which stands for sewer availability charge, is for the maximum daily capacity that we have to stand ready to serve. So even if it's just one day of the year, we have to have the pipes, the cities have to have the pipes. So it is a one-time upfront, or if you add on, then you're going to pay one-time again fee. But as Ms. Nauman mentioned, there's a 75% discount for some of the reasons that some of the other stakeholders have mentioned. The SAC fee for restaurants is based on a technical analysis of the cost of service. That's something I know the Chamber and others have stressed repeatedly. They want to see utilities based on that. By law, it pays only for a portion of our debt service, the portion reserved for growth. If any type of establishments gets a break, then other types of businesses and establishments will have to pay more. This fee has existed in one version or another for 43 years, and it replaced a more onerous lump sum charge to cities for the reserve capacity. It works for cities by allowing them to pay for the capacity they need and want for growth. We must build it in advance so we don't keep digging up the streets and so forth. So we have built reserve capacity, we have incurred debt, and we need users to pay for that. The cities only pay as development occurs. The regional rate base takes the economic risk. Over years, many genuinely good causes, this one among them, have asked for exemptions or breaks and made cases. This includes churches, affordable housing, small business in general, stadiums, I could go on. There are a lot of people that would, of course, rather not pay these fees. MCS historically works with the cities that pay this fee on any potential rule changes to make sure the rules are fair and the changes are driven by informed consensus among them. This includes many task forces and public meetings. With Metro Cities, we've had four in just this partial decade alone, and there's final reports and all the material on our website if you want to look at them. This specific issue came up in 2009. A technical rationale, including some of the reasons given here for the discount, was acknowledged, and the 75% discount was adopted. That's in effect now. So they really are only paying 25% of what the same seating would pay inside a restaurant. In 2013, we have a high-level task force with many mayors and a council member from Minneapolis looking at many things, the big picture, whether we should continue SAC at all and whether there should be exceptions from the technical basis at all. And they recommended against subsidizing any type of development. Finally, I want to note that this language would change what the council bills local governments. We sort of, this is a wholesale fee, not the actual businesses. Cities already have a lot of flexibility in their retail charges, including they can charge more or less than our fee. Lakeville actually had a discount for outdoor spaces before we did, for outdoor patios. Cities add on a water supply availability charge as well as fees to support their local sewer infrastructure, and this is a substantial funding source for cities as well. They can apply credits on site and do this if they wish already. They can spread the costs of our SAC fees over many years, as one of the testifiers mentioned, if the city wants that. The Metropolitan Wastewater System has worked well, technically, environmentally, and financially. We like small businesses too, and I like to eat outside. We'd be happy to study this, but we would like the chance to work with our customer cities and hopefully maintain the technical basis for the charge and collaborate with all the stakeholders.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Appreciate it. Anyone else that wishes to testify today? Seeing none, we have a list of member questions or discussion. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A little technical malfunction with my microphone here. I really like this bill, and as somebody who sat in the center chair of a city and struggled to fight for small businesses on Main Street in Waconia, and now in my role here for all the cities I serve, SAC is a huge and onerous problem. Coffee shop owner in my district when I was mayor, I almost had to light myself on fire to get the attention of people who could help us out. it is a very cumbersome and clunky process. And I just think that the arguments that have been heard and the arguments that have been made and the arguments that I made as mayor were the same one that we talked about yesterday in the subcommittee, which is for a coffee shop with sidewalk seating, it is somewhat ludicrous to consider that cup of coffee is going to be, and unfortunately we're going back to that, injected into the system there and then. So applying those is difficult. And I just think that this is a fine bill. It is a pro-business bill. SAC is expensive and difficult, and really it's not very easy to figure it all out. And again, as somebody who fought really hard for several members of my community, I urge members to vote green on this, or vote yes.
No buttons here today.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things. Those in the outside world who watch this institution should take note of April 6th, 2016, in the 89th session. Wilgenius and Drazkowski are on a bill together. I'm very disappointed that you did not bring your co-author, because the House photographer is here, and I will guarantee you we would have seen that for several times, Representative Wilgenius, throughout the rest of history here in this organization. But to the amendment, I have a concern that I support the bill. But I have a concern that we could have some problems going forward. So if we don't make a clarification, and many of us learned about conjunctions from Schoolhouse Rock. So let me point out lines 1.8 and 1.9. In quotes, we have eating and drinking establishments. I think it should be eating or drinking establishments, because you may end up with questions and people saying, well, you don't do both. And I know what the spirit and intent of this is. And we have we would have to beg the indulgences of the Democrats if we do want to offer an oral amendment here today, because we did not make a deadline on an amendment. So I will ask the chair if he's open to discussing that today and if we could move that amendment.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius, are you open to that change?
I am.
With that, I will incorporate that oral amendment into the A1, which was an amendment I moved on line 1.8, deleting and inserting or, be incorporated into the A1. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a question for Mr. Willett.
Welcome back to the committee, sir.
And Mr. Willett, if you don't have the number right at the top of mind, I'm certainly happy to be patient for you to respond to it. But in deference to the overall Met Council budget, I'm just wondering if you know the proportion of the fees collected by the Met Council, what proportion or percentage would be representative by SAC fees?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the SAC portion of the MCES, the Environmental Services budget, which is mostly for wastewater as opposed to all the other things the council does, is about $35 million, I think, of $260 million budget this year. So one of the things that the last task force looked at was, if you eliminated SAC entirely, what would that do to the volume charges? I think it was about a 20% increase or so.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Let me just make that. You mentioned that the SAC fees are intended to provide for the anticipated growth of the system. And
sure.
So with that, Mr. Willett, what amount of debt service do you currently contemplate on an annual basis? What amount of debt service do you carry right now?
Mr. Willett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. I believe we're at about $115 million in debt service. Our capital spending averages about $140 million. Most of that overwhelmingly is for replacement of the existing pipes and infrastructure. There has not been a whole lot of growth into greenfields. Some of our pipes are 100 years old, and so with a total replacement value of $6 or $7 billion, that's actually not that great a number to keep your assets in good shape.
Mr. Chair, and I would concur that it's a low debt level. Are those on a 10-year bond rating, or how do you amortize for that debt?
Mr. Willett?
Mr. Chair, Representative Albrecht, we're AAA rated, so we're able to raise money at the cheapest cost possible. It is, I think, always been a 20-year debt, some of which are council bonds and some of which are supported through the Public Facilities Authority loans that we can get slightly below market interest rates. We have $1.3 billion outstanding.
Mr. Chair, it would be my impression, based upon kind of the calculation of a present value discount, in my mind, that the SAC fees really don't represent the lion's share of the debt service that's being taken care of by the MCES on an annual basis. And so my consternation is, again, going to the point of, I think the SAC fees may be unnecessary in terms of to accommodate the growth of the system that they operate.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just kind of chuckling a little bit because we had a lot of these discussions at City Council. Infrastructure isn't sexy, and what goes into it is less sexy. So it's really hard to get people to want to pay for it. But there are costs, and I know you're talking about percentage of tax charges that go to fixing the whole capital thing, but the costs are to cities, too, that they do pass on to the taxpayer. So when we talk about shifting or making exemptions in property taxes, you always got to remember there's still a set cost that someone is going to have to pay, so that's going to shift the burden onto everybody else or different properties within that jurisdiction. So I just want you to keep that in mind a little bit. And also keep in mind, anytime you change a structure of a fee, the folks that have paid it beforehand have already paid it. So that patio that, you know, was getting that 25% increase of business, well, they paid that SAC charge to get that business. Now, I don't mind, I'm glad to hear I had forgotten about the discussion about reducing the patio cost to 25% of the total charge. So that's a great way to do it because we do have less time of the year to actually use them. But I was wondering why you didn't think about maybe putting something in the bill on size of patio that could be added, because throwing out like 4 or 6 tables in front of a cafe is one thing, but like creating a whole rooftop patio or a permanent structure that's a lot larger, that's a whole different thing too, and that can really add to the burden, because even though we might, a lot of your businesses have people that live nearby and might just go right back home, there's a lot of us that bike into Minneapolis, and yeah, we're going to flush before we leave. So just some consideration.
Representative Wagenius.
I think in this case, we're not doing the shifting that you ordinarily would think about. And one of the reasons, and we had testimony yesterday in subcommittee, is that the system is built for wet weather, when we have wet weather. But people sit outside when it's dry. So we're not overburdening the system in that respect. So I think that's one of the issues. And I think that's one of them, but I also want to have my council member who made the, if we can increase the businesses and the taxes that are paid, we are in a net gainer in this situation.
Councilmember Johnson.
Committee member, in the bill I would specifically point out that it mentions around the expansion or addition of facilities.
Yes.
So this is only when an expansion or addition of facilities, bathroom facilities, is not being made. So if somebody was to do, let's say, a really large rooftop patio, they're certainly going to be putting bathrooms up there, at which point they would then incur the SAC fees. And I would also respond, too, to the point about the 75% discount on outdoors, on outdoor patios that's there today. Obviously, it should be there. I mean, it's only 4 months out of the year, and there's rain that happens as well. So proportionately to the weather, that makes sense that it would be a 75% discount. But the big piece here, as you've heard from our testifiers, A, they're not seeing an actual increase by 25% in terms of business. And B, even with being 75% off, it's still 25% too high. We have business owners here who are choosing not to do outdoor seating because of even this 75% discounted ZAC fee. And that is a loss for the state in terms of revenue. It's a loss for the customers. It's a loss for our community, for the business owners, and for the city.
Thank you. Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I misunderstood in some of the testimony. One member was saying because they don't have a patio, they're making 25% less of the neighbor that has the patio. I understand that if you have a patio, you may see a shift from indoor to outdoor. I waited tables. We had a great patio. You wanted to get there and try to make sure you were scheduled for the patio on a sunny day. Otherwise, you just weren't going to see as many folks inside. But that business did see more business than the business without the patio. So I was kind of talking about the correlation between those two. I just want people to just keep in mind the city is still having to pay a certain amount to Met Council to clean that water, to build the infrastructure. So if the businesses aren't paying that one lump sum to start with, or that added when they add the patio, someone else is paying it because it still costs money. So I just wanted people to keep in mind that there is a little bit of a shift. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joaquim. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And listening to the testimony today and the testimony yesterday, it seems to me that this is an issue that needs a very strong look by all the stakeholders, because I think that there's been some great points raised by MCDS that we have a system that we need to maintain. We expect, clean water. We expect our wastewater to be treated appropriately in the system, and that has a cost to it. However, it's very clear that these SAC fees, and I've heard this in my community as well from small business owners, really is having a negative effect on their ability to do business and expand business when you look at the upfront costs before they even bring a dollar in the door. When you look at the fact that you may pay, as a tenant, you may pay a SAC fee as a business owner, the gentleman we heard from yesterday, and then ended up moving his business. The SAC fee stays with the landlord, so the new business that opens up there also is charged a SAC fee, and that business owner that moved his business to a larger place had to be charged a second SAC fee. And so I think that it, and what I hear from the business community is that they're completely willing to step up and pay these kind of user fees in order to do business in our communities, because we appreciate the public infrastructure that has to take place to support our businesses. But these user fees really need to have a lens of fairness about them, and I would really like us to see the parties come together and reevaluate this fairness so that this issue doesn't continue to come back around, because that's what I'm hearing underneath all of that discussion. So I hope that can happen. And I really appreciate the author bringing it forward and the business owners coming to testify. And look forward to many more Wagenius-Droskowski bills in the future.
Representative Joaquim, a follow-up?
Oh, yeah, just a quick question I have forgotten to ask. So, and this is, sorry for my ignorance on this. So if a restaurant, is there a building code requirement with how many tables you have and then how many bathroom stalls you have to have? I just can't remember.
Councilmember Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I know there are some within the city around certain square footage would allow you to have, for instance, only one bathroom, gender-neutral bathroom, and at a certain size capacity, you have to add additional bathrooms. So there certainly is a correlation there. The exact correlation I do not have off the top of my head. And we may have, I don't know if our friends from the Restaurant Association might know a little better about that, but there certainly is. Certainly you couldn't have a massive restaurant with only two small bathrooms. So.
I was just curious, because you did mention if it was a bigger patio, they'd add bathrooms. I didn't know if there was a code that required them to. Thank you.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And basically, just some comments here. Being in the building and remodeling industry, it's always fun to talk about SAC when it doesn't have to do with that. So this is kind of an interesting conversation for me. I'm having fun. But I think my biggest concerns are, if you're not adding capacity, and I think one of the things that was said was that when development occurs and we're not doing development, what we're doing is putting a few, and most of the time I think it is a few tables, looking at the folks that showed up today to testify, we're not really adding more. And when you go inside the coffee shop or the restaurant or whatever, that's usually empty and everybody's sitting outside because we love to sit outside in Minnesota. So I guess that would be my biggest issue. I really don't see us adding capacity. And if you were adding capacity, you as a restaurant would want to add more bathrooms in order to serve your customer base, or they're not going to show up. But I think more than anything, in order to see, I mean, I really like your bill because I think it just makes great sense. You'd have to prove to me that there's more flushing going on if you're sitting outside. And I don't think there is, because, you know, we've been there. Everybody's outside. And as Representative Joaquin said, you want to get there early so you can get the outside seating. Nobody wants to sit inside. And also, I just want to applaud everybody that showed up today. You know, granted, yes, there are some folks that pay this, but in order to make things happen, you have to show up and be here and take the time. And I know it's sometimes not the cheapest thing for you to do to be here. You could make more money being home doing what you do. So I really appreciate you taking the time that this is this important to you to be here. And quite frankly, I just I really support the bill. I think it just makes great sense. And until you can prove to me that, you know, you're adding capacity, which I don't think you are, because I don't think anybody's flushing any more than they did if you sat inside. I just really don't believe that happens. That thank you for bringing this forward.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was hoping for some taste offerings here from the restaurant. I'm a little disappointed because, you know, the way to a legislator's heart or their vote is through their stomach. I wrote down Marla's Caribbean Cuisine. That just sounded really super good to me today, so I wrote that down for future reference. But I just want to thank you, Representative Wagenius, for bringing this pro-business bill forward. And this is good for businesses, some of which have suffered because of the recent increase in the minimum wage, and it's really been a burden to some of these restaurants and small businesses. So I just wanted to say keep up the good work, and I hope to see many more pro-business bills coming from Representative Wagenius. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Wagenius, we'll give you the final word.
I appreciate the support.
Thank you. With that, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 3644 be referred to State Government Finance as amended. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Next on the agenda, House File 3770. Representative Kelly. Welcome to the committee, Chair Kelly. I'll go ahead and make a motion that your bill be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3770 is pretty straightforward. This bill would simply exclude the city of Cannon Falls, which is in my district. It borders on the county line of Goodhue and Dakota. So we would just like the exemption so that we would not fall under the jurisdiction of the Met Council. Cannon Falls sits approximately 35 miles away from the cities. And with me I have Mr. Dave Maroney from the City of Cannon Falls to give some more detail.
Thank you. I'm Dave Maroney. I'm the Director of Economic Development and Planning for the City of Cannon Falls, and we are looking for the first time ever at potentially expanding the jurisdictional limits of the City of Cannon Falls from Goodhue County directly across the county line into a part of Dakota County. For the last year or more, we've been working with the three property owners who own the property in Dakota County, along with a partnership with Great River Energy and Dakota Electric and our Economic Development Authority, to look at the potential growth expansion primarily for data center development, which happens to take us into the Dakota County area. Our preference, as has been the past with Northfield, New Prague, and others, our preference in Goodhue County is to control our own destiny as we grow into, in this example, into Dakota County. And nothing personal against the Metropolitan Council, but our preference would be to plan our own destiny We don't see any services being provided to this area from the metropolitan area, Met Council included, so it's nothing personal, it's just more practical. If you have any questions about our plans, I'd be happy to address them at your request.
Thank you, Mr. Maroney. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Maroney, and just in light of the conversation that just completed itself, if, in fact, you did expand into Dakota County, what would be your inclination in terms of services provided or required of you, such as SAC fees, within the context of Cannon Falls itself?
No one loves SAC fees more than us and you. The answer to your question is the City of Cannon Falls has our own permitted wastewater treatment plant. We have our own permitted municipal water system. All of the services into this particular area and growth into Dakota County would be provided entirely by the City of Cannon Falls.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And having been the only person to vote against Representative Emmer at the time when he moved the half of Rockford that was in Hennepin County to Wright County, all joking aside, that maybe we should leave this in Metropolitan Council so we can get some of those SAC fees. Just kidding. I think this is a good deal.
Any other member questions or discussion? Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was going to just ping off of what Representative Albright said. Could you imagine how difficult this would be for the City of Cannon Falls if half of their community was covered by the Met Council because they happen to be in the seven-county metro area, and the other portion, which would probably be a sizable portion outside of the Met Council district, and the competitive disadvantage that some may have wanting to locate a business that similar to what we were just talking about in that portion of the community. And it, again, just comes to light today because we had that conversation, and you're the next bill up. But there is going to be those kinds of issues that are going to happen as the periphery grows around the seven-county metro area. So that's all, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Any other member questions or discussion? Seeing none, is there anyone that wishes to testify in the audience for or against the bill? Seeing none, Chair Kelly will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just appreciate your support.
That, members, I'll renew my motion. The House File 3770 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Chair. You. Members.
That, members, we've concluded our agenda. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning. We are adjourned.